And we're going to be reading the last piece of Anti-Systemic Movements, Chapter 5, 1968, The Great Rehearsal. And last week they were, what's the right word, debriefing or whatever, they were discussing the legacies of 1968. And we're going to continue looking at those legacies. And so finally, of the legacies of 1968, in the 1970s and 1980s, civil society at large has been far less responsive to the commands of the bearers or would-be bearers of state power than it had been before 1968. Although a general phenomenon, this diminished power of states over civil society has been most evident in the semi-periphery, where it has taken the form of a crisis of bourgeois and proletarian dictatorships alike. Since 1973, bourgeois dictatorships have been displaced by democratic regimes in Southern Europe, Portugal, Greece, Spain, East Asia, Philippines, South Korea, and in Latin America, most notably Brazil and Argentina. Alongside this crisis, indeed preceding and following it, has developed the crisis of the so-called dictatorships of the proletariat. Notwithstanding the many and real differences that set the Prague Spring and the Chinese Cultural Revolution apart, the two movements had one thing in common. They were assaults on the dictatorship of the officials. All right, notwithstanding the many and real differences that set the Prague Spring and the Chinese Cultural Revolution apart, the two movements had one thing in common. They were assaults on the dictatorship of the officials, primarily but not exclusively on the dictatorship of the Communist Party's officials, dressed up as a dictatorship of the proletariat. And my interjection, dictatorship, totalitarianism, that form happened to be communism. The one we got here is called democracy. Continuing, in China, the assault was so violent and unrestrained as to deal a fatal blow to that dictatorship.
And I really do apologize because you get distracted and your mind starts splitting. I'm trying to bring those pieces back now. All right.
In China, the assault was so violent and unrestrained as to deal a fatal blow to that dictatorship. Subsequently, party rule could be reestablished as it has been only by accommodating demands for greater grassroots democracy and economic decentralization. In Czechoslovakia, a nonviolent and restrained assault was put down speedily through Soviet military intervention. Yet between 1970 and 1980, the challenge reemerged in a more formidable fashion in Poland, eventually shaking the Soviet leadership's confidence in the possibility of patching up a crumbling hegemony indefinitely by means of repression and purely cosmetic changes in party dictatorship. This tendency has been most evident among third world states. The oil-producing states were able to take advantage of the new balance of power in the interstate system by charging, after 1973, a much higher rent for the use of their natural resources than they were ever able to do before 1968. This advantage lasted about 10 years. A few other third world states have been able to step up their own industrialization by taking advantage of the relocation of industrial activities from core countries. How much of a gain this will constitute by the 1990s remains to be seen, but most third world states, caught between higher prices for energy and resources and stiffer competition from newly industrializing countries, have experienced even greater impoverishment and underdevelopment than they did before 1968. Similar considerations apply to other subordinate groups. Thus, over the last 15 years, the progressive breakdown of generational, gender, and ethnic barriers to the circulation of elites, which has benefited quite a few members of each group, has been accompanied by youth unemployment, double exploitation of women, and the immiseration of quote-unquote minorities on an unprecedented scale. As for the change in the balance of power between labor and capital, its benefits have accrued mostly to workers engaged in stepping up the automation of labor processes, or in servicing the expanded markets for elites, or in running the relocated plants in their new locations. For the rest, the gains of the late 1960s and early 1970s have been eroded. At first, by the great inflation of the 1970s, and then by the unemployment of the 1980s. It's probably too early to assess who is benefiting and who is losing in material terms from the crisis of dictatorships. But here, too, the preliminary record seems to indicate that the material benefits of greater democracy have accrued only to a small fraction of the population. And is there any doubt, as we've had 30 years to see this process deepen and accelerate, that that is the case? Democracy is a con.